Today on episode 22 of Raising Financial Freedom, we have a TEDx speaker and author of the book, How a Mother Should Talk About Money with Her Daughter, Aja McClanahan. She's here today with us to talk about her book and some of the trials and tribulations that she's had with money and success with financial literacy. What is that special bond that a mother and daughter have when it comes to money? As always, you know I can hear my daughter calling me from a mile away.
Dad, hurry up and turn on the music.
Have you ever wondered why some people seem to have it all financially? Do well-off parents simply hand their children money? Or is there more to this wealth thing? Welcome to Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. We are here to talk about everything you never knew to teach your children when it comes to starting their financial future. The principles behind wealth and methods that are out there to teach your child about personal financial freedom. There is no real trick to earning other than learning. We are here to discuss, teach, and grow with you. Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast, with your host and concerned parent, Eric Yard. Let us get right into today's show.
Welcome to another episode of Raising Financial Freedom. Today we have Aja McClanahan. Aja, how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me. You set my first and last name perfectly. So thank you for doing that.
Wow. Glad. And I'm very glad about that one. I practice a little. Aja, where are you coming out of?
So I'm based in Chicago. I am between the south side of the city and the suburbs. And I go back and forth. But I'm basically, I don't want to say born and raised, but raised in Chicago. I came here probably when I was around 2 years old. And I spent my time between the city and the suburbs. But I would say my formative years were mainly in the south suburbs.
Aja, we're here to talk about how a mother should talk about money with her daughter.
Ooh, one of my favorite topics.
What was your biggest challenge you had to overcome writing this book?
I think the part that was difficult was like figuring out what I wanted to communicate to the readers, because I think someone could pick up that book and be like, oh my goodness, this is going to be like a perfect guide. I'll talk about budgeting. I'll talk about dating and marriage and saving up for a rainy day. And yes, those are some of the topics in there, but it's more of a book that the theme is more encouraging people just to have the conversations. So the idea is, even if you haven't had a perfect money history yourself, you still need to make money a topic of conversation. So as you probably know, in the African American community, there are a few topics that are very taboo, and money is one of those. And so as a result, you will see, for example, people get to their end of life and the family's often scrambling, arguing because they don't know where grandma put her money or how she paid her bills or what's the balance on her house. And that's really because we've made it really difficult to talk about money. So the book is more about encouraging women who are not, if you're not a mother, that's fine, but maybe someone who is considered an elder or somewhat of a role model, to talk to the women in your life about money and to make it. And I focus on women and daughters and kids, because just like we would talk about fashion or dating or pop culture, we should also insert those conversations about money. So that's the difficulty, the long and short of it, was just to set expectations that this is not a book about budgeting. It's a book really about encouraging people to be like their vulnerable, transparent selves when it comes to money, even if they were not like a money genius. And kind of the reason I came up with that idea, I did a TED talk and it's called Money Conversations with Our Daughters. And it was basically about how my grandmother, who lived, she basically picked cotton in Mississippi. She was past the years of slavery, but she was still like, her parents were sharecroppers. And she came from the very racist South to the North and cleaned houses for wealthy people. And she never made a whole lot of money, but she was able to help many people in her lifetime. She actually made some pretty significant financial progress in her life. And it she would always have those conversations with me. She'd be like, oh, I remember one time I did something really stupid and this was the outcome. Or she'd be like, one time I did something really smart and I thought I was going to turn out this way or not. And so we were like always talking about money. And I didn't even realize that the way that we talked about money really shaped me. It got me ready for when I entered into my marriage. I became like the financial manager of the household. And when I had my kids, it really gave me a framework in which I would talk to my kids about money. So she just made it casual. She made it funny. She would tell me about her failures and her successes. And I feel like it shaped a lot of my like financial outlook. So that was a really long-winded answer, but that's what it is.
I hear you. Aja, with the stigma of money and the secretive habits of parents about their finances, what action steps, in your opinion, can parents take to fight against these two problems?
So I think one of the things you can do is make the money conversation less taboo. And so I think parents can do that can happen somewhat by sharing about certain conversations that they feel comfortable with that are age appropriate. If daddy has a gambling problem, obviously that's going to be the topic is very mature. It's just hard to address, but there are small things that you can talk about with your kids. For example, you can show them the receipt when you come back from grocery shopping and be like, this is what we spend on groceries. What I do with my kids is I'll be like, hey guys, what's your net worth this week? So they have an app on their phone that aggregate all their accounts, their investing, their savings. And I'm like, show me a screenshot. What are you working with? And so that's like a regular conversation that we have. What's up? What's your net worth? So I think those are some ways just to make it just more common and make it less taboo. So there comes a point where people just feel more comfortable talking about money, and then make sure you share the embarrassing stuff too. Right. Again, I think a lot of reasons why money is so taboo is because it's one of my friends. Her name is Tony Husband. She has a podcast and a blog called Debt Free Divas. And she put it like this: money is like an adult report card. So you feel like if you're doing good with money, you're doing good in life. If you're doing bad, you might be doing bad in life. But I think it's important to definitely separate the two, because you could be doing bad with money through circumstances that are not always your fault. So I think it's okay to talk about like the bad times or the bad with the money as well as the good. Again, just to remove the stigma and just increase that vulnerability and transparency that spurs conversations and makes them like interesting and engaging. Because you know, what kid wants to sit around and just listen to their parent talk about all their victories and their war stories about how they won? It doesn't feel authentic. And I don't think it's very engaging. So yeah, I think those are just having the conversation, even when it's painful.
Okay. So you just take it some points that you answered about talking about your grandmother. It seems like your grandmother was very instrumental in the financial development of what you have going on. What teachings from her are you passing on to your daughters?
Oh my goodness. My grandmother was a pretty phenomenal, quirky personality. And just to give you a little bit of backstory of how we were thrown into a situation. I had graduated college and I didn't want to go home and like with my mom or dad. And I wasn't quite ready to be on my own. And so there was a time where I actually had to move out of an apartment I was living in because I was just really doing quite terribly managing my money. I didn't like corporate life. It was just hard for me. It was a very difficult transition to go from college to like corporate America. So I had to move back in with her. So at that time, I had come from a very nice swanky suburb on the northwest side of Chicago. And here I am basically in the hood living with my grandma. And she's one of those people that takes everybody in. You got people coming in and out. And I'm like setting up shop in this tiny room. Oh my goodness, how did I get here? I went to college, did all this stuff they told me to do. And I'm right here in the ghetto, basically doing like substitute teaching. And it's not the worst position someone could be in by far. I was very fortunate, but it still felt like a step backwards, basically, since she was like one of my biggest fans when it came, or advocates when it came to going to college. So I was right back there with her. And so I got to spend a couple of years with her. And she was very frugal. She grew up during the Depression era. So frugality is not even the word. You could even say, I don't want to say miser, because misers are not generous. She was frugal, but still very generous, but just extremely frugal, very thrifty. So she would freeze stuff all the time. She'd be like, oh, these, don't throw those bananas out. We can freeze them. We froze everything. We shopped at Sam's Club. And when my mail would come, she would rip open my mail and be like, is this a bill? You need to pay it. And I'd be like, get out of my business. And she would see me going out, driving around, having fun with my friends, talking on the phone. And she would be like, mm-mm, you need to hang up the phone and pay your bills. And if you don't have money, you need to figure out how to get it to pay your bills. So she was just on me like that. So she really instilled like a sense of personal responsibility, where she's, you can't be going out and having fun. You got bills. And I never made the connection. I'm like, can I live? But it was really profound, and it guided me when we started on our journey to pay off all of our debt as a family. So the question was, how would I pass that on to my kids? They definitely know that I have some very thrifty ways about me as well. I'm not as extreme as my grandmother was, but I'm still that person that I freeze a lot of stuff. I cook and buy in bulk. I don't mind going to the thrift stores, because I'm always just, the money that we save is money that can be invested for your future. So those are some things that I am trying to instill in my kids. And then also this idea of personal responsibility. And right now they don't have bills. They have duties around the house and homework. I do mention that, hey, what are you doing on YouTube? You have work to do. You have things to get done. There's always something you could be doing. My grandmother really left an impression on me, you know, regarding a lot of financial matters. And I end up using a lot of it. It helped us pay off our debt, start investing in real estate. I've been able to be a mom manager for my kids. They're in acting and entertainment. They do like voiceover and singing and stuff like that. And I feel like my grandmother really laid that financial foundation in me.
Now, you mentioned your kids are in acting and singing. Your children started earning at an early age.
And they did.
They're also homeschooled. What aspects of financial literacy have you taught them?
Yeah, that's actually been a pretty fun part of the whole journey. So there was a time where we actually took a class to study long-term value investing. So we learned how to analyze stocks and look at different key performance indicators and the difference between stocks and bonds and ETFs. So that was pretty fun. And the other thing is budgeting. My kids will be like, I want this amount of money from my paycheck, because they'll get paychecks and residuals from their work. And I'm like, write a budget. Tell me what you're going to spend it on. So they are responsible for sending me a spreadsheet. They know how to do a budget spreadsheet and Google Sheets. We've done activities where they have run businesses and learned some different business concepts. So at one point they were enrolled in a program and they were using creations from 3D printing and selling them as jewelry. So they actually had to like cold call, go solicit like stores to be like, hey, can we put our jewelry in your store? So they did all that stuff. Was not wildly successful because they're kids, but they got the experience. And yeah, so just things like that. And with the money that they do earn, they know how to log into their brokerage account and place trades and buy stocks and buy ETFs. Yeah, we've done a ton of.
What ages?
So right now, my youngest is about to turn 12. My oldest is about to turn 16.
And they're logging into brokerage accounts. Wow.
At my direction. Now, I just want to, because I can hear somebody, maybe they're listening. They're like, oh my goodness, my kids like picking their nose and fart all day. My kids would never do any of this stuff. My kids also picking their nose in front all day. Hopefully they're not going to listen to this, but I don't want anyone to think, oh my goodness, I could never do that. I don't have the time, or my kids don't have the attention span. My kids are still kids, but I work with them. The first time they're going to whine, they're going to yell, they're going to scream. They're going to be like, I don't want to do this. And it's not a pretty picture. If I were to like just take a video of some of the stuff, you'd see a lot of rolling on the floor and whining and complaining. So the idea here, and I do mention this in the book, is that you plant seeds. So don't expect, you have some prodigy kids who are like out there on YouTube, and the stock we're going to analyze today at this strike price, we're going to go long and we're going to be bullish. There are some freaks of nature that are out there like that. They're incredibly disciplined. They're very smart and they get it at an early age. My kids are our kids, like your kids are kids. So the idea is just to press through it and plant the seeds so that there's something there that can grow into more of an interest, more discipline, or whatever the case is. So I don't want anybody to be like, I could never. You could.
Like you were saying, you definitely, there was a passage in the book saying that they may not, you want to accept it right now, but later on, bam, it hits them. It all comes together. This is what my mother taught me. And this is how you do this. And this is how you apply it this way. So I do understand what you're doing.
Okay. Okay. Because I think sometimes people will listen to what I'm saying and they're like, oh my goodness, she's amazing. She's phenomenal. But if they were to see the behind the scenes, they'd probably just laugh so hard and be like, oh my goodness, she's a total fraud. But no, these are things that I really do. My kids, they go through all the motions, but we get through it. My goal is just to be consistent and to have the conversation. That I feel like that is the best that I can do right now, because I've got a lot of stuff going on, and my kids, again, they're still kids. So I think that's a great place to start. Just have the conversations, and as you learn, teach them.
That's good. That's good. When I was growing up, my mother would send me to the ATM, and this was back when ATMs was like just came out. And she would send me to go get money for her on a semi-regular basis. When it was my turn to go to the bank now, I had no problems. I knew exactly what to do. I knew exactly what I was looking for. So, I do understand what you're doing.
By the time I was like 14 or 15 years old, my mom was a single mom. I had the keys to the car, and I would drive to the grocery store, get money at the ATM, go grocery shopping, come home and throw some stuff on the grill. Right. So, you know, when your mom is a single mom, you just have to step up and do things. Or even if you're not a single mom, because I'm sure that other people have those similar experiences, but it was just something we had to do in our family because my mom was just so strapped for time. But yeah, that definitely left an impression on me as well. Going to the ATM and being like, oh my goodness, is this what groceries cost? Is this what it takes to feed our four-person household?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, definitely. Transition from single to married. How was the transition of you and your husband's finances from two to now one?
Pretty hilarious. No, actually, it was relatively smooth in that very early on, my husband was like, okay, I think you could probably just manage everything. The only slight problem we had was that before we got married, we were both tasked with calculating all of our debt, like student loan debt, car loans and everything. And my husband didn't have really good records of what he owed, or at least he said he didn't. And so probably a few months after we got married, he started getting mail. And I started going through the mail. Oh my goodness, did you know you have $20,000 extra in student loans than you told me? And then immediately one of the creditors from like a private school started garnishing his check. So that gave us like a bumpy start. And the other thing was I had my first child pretty quickly after we got married. And we both agreed that it would be better if I could stay home with her as long as possible. So the only other issue, and it wasn't really an issue, it's something that we eventually worked through, was that living on one income in the beginning was hard only because we had so much debt. And once I was able to convince him that I think I can come up with a plan for us to pay off debt, he was pretty much on board from the beginning. And I can honestly say that we've never never fought about money. And if we did, maybe once or twice. And we always came to a really peaceful conclusion eventually. So it wasn't as hard as I thought. I think, again, being with my grandmother, where she's, you focus on paying your bills, get that done. If your bills are not paid, you're not, you don't have money to do anything else. So I think that was helpful. So I can say that we're very fortunate in that right away we were able to get one bank account, like start merging our financial goals. And eventually we did, you know, accomplish some pretty neat things when it came to finances.
Hey, I just want to remind everyone that we have the question of the month still going on. And this is your chance to be on and be part of the show. Just go to raisingfinancialfreedom.com, go to the contact page, scroll down to the bottom, and you should see the question and a sample answer. Just press record to start answering the question. Now, everyone who answers the question will be automatically entered into a contest for a $25 Amazon gift card. How does the money mindset of a woman differ from men? And how do parents nurture that in their daughters?
Yeah, so I actually talked a little bit about this in the mm-hmm. book. And people will say women are emotional, men are logical, and that is true. But that doesn't mean that women are like naturally bad at money and men are naturally better at dealing with money. I think the issue comes down to just mindset. The way that it explained in the book is that, and this is based off of a study that I was able to peruse and review, men have this idea of being like a leader and that they're not so much teamwork oriented. So they like to accomplish things on their own, make decisions on their own. And so when they come into a family, it's unnatural to turn that off sometimes. And sometimes you need that in a family. A man just has to make an executive decision. And I don't know what people's philosophies are or whatever, but I believe a man can and should be the leader of a home. As long as he's not going to lead his family into off of a cliff, I think that's okay. But women are they're more teamwork oriented. So they think more in terms of we, they think more collectively. Also, men are more likely to attribute, if they have some type of financial success, they're like, yeah, me, I did it. And so so they'll give themselves more intelligence, a more business savvy than they might really. So they have that confidence factor. And then in women, if they're successful with money, they're more likely to say, it must have been some fortuitous event. It must have been the gods smiling on me or something like that. But I think if synergized properly, both of those mindsets can come together and produce some success. So I think it's helpful for each party to understand like how they think about money, how they were raised with money, and then work with the other side. So I'll give you an example. For me, and I think a lot of women are like this, I was like, I need security, safety. I like having piles of money in the bank in case Armageddon comes. And how valuable is money going to be? You just think about those things that women think about, safety and security in the future. And men can sometimes be very, I don't want to say impulsive, but they like their toys, they like their gadgets, their hobbies. But I think you need both. So for my husband and I, we were able to agree to a savings plan where we would put so much money away into savings. And part of the savings, one of the accounts that we created was to save up money for him to get a classic car because he really wants this classic car. But just setting aside money for things that he feels is important. And even if it's like in the grand scheme of things, I could care less cars and gadgets, but I don't think you can just monopolize or just dominate all the money and say, we're going to do this. And no one else has input or any outlet to do something fun with the money. So I think if you can come up with compromises, it can be helpful.
Okay. So I know you have more than one income stream. I think knowing how to create other income streams is very important in this day and age. How important is that we teach our children about this concept?
So I think it's very important. I think the way it's taught matters as well. I'm not a huge fan of people trying to start up several income streams at one time, because I think the distraction can make you like dabble into a lot of things, but not really be good at anything. And I only know because I've been in that situation. I think a smart thing to do is understand that your first or second stream of income should be used to invest into passive income efforts or passive income streams. I'm sorry. Ideally, I tell my kids, like, try not to spend so much. And when you do find that you have money, think about what can I buy that makes me more money. Don't just run to get your Jordans and Barbie dolls. Think about buying something that could generate more money, whether that is a stock, whether it's some real estate, whether it's a vending machine or a business. So I think the idea is that if you don't have to work, that's great. But for most regular people, their kids will have to enter into the workforce. And that is not a time that they have to loathe or hate or try to hurry up and get out of. That's a time where they can be actually, they could be saving. They could be building up money in their 401k. They can be saving money and planning for an exit. So using their main stream of income to seed other passive sources of income, I think is a great way to teach that concept.
Okay. With all that you've went through with money, what's your vision for your children when it comes to money?
So my hope is that my kids will definitely be multimillionaires at some point in their life. And not just for multimillionaires' sake, there is this statistic that says when women earn more money, they actually give more. They're able to give more. A lot of people are like, if I won the lottery, I give to this charity to do this or that. But women are they're actually more likely to give away money, even in their most like poverty-stricken state. So how much more service to humanity could my kids be if they were able to make enough money and support causes and people that, you know, that they care about? So that's my vision for them, is to definitely have more money than I ever did and have a vision for that, have a mission for their money, that it's not just for them to indulge, although that'll be a part of it. I want them to have fun. I want them to enjoy life, but I also want them to think about like the bigger picture. Like if they could become angel investors or philanthropists, I think that would be pretty cool.
That sounds cool. Yeah. When you wrote this book, what did it feel like writing that book?
It was actually pretty exciting because I had already done a TED talk about it that was very well received. People loved the topic and they were like, oh my goodness, you're hitting on all the points that I've always talked about. I want to talk about money, but I don't feel like I'm very smart when it comes to money. So people were like very excited about the topic. And so when I had the opportunity to write the book, it just felt like the culmination of all of the thought that I had put into the TED talk. Now being able to spread it or propagate the message on a larger platform was very exciting. I was writing the book during a tumultuous time in my life. I was going through a lot of changes. Some things were happening like family-wise, and then I was like, I had so much stuff going on, like family, business, my kids, just so many things thrown into the mix, but I was able to finish. And so that was really exciting to me when I was like, oh my goodness, all these things were happening in my life. And I was able to like write and finish a book. And I was very amazed that I was able to push myself to that extent and get this product done, get this work done. So it was exciting. It was stressful. But I felt a huge relief when I finished writing it, not because it was done. I'm like, oh, I'm done. But also because I was like, you know, a message that I really care about, I was able to craft it and send it on its way to the people that needed to hear it.
You said it was stressful. What was frustrating about writing this book?
Well, probably one of the more frustrating things was that I couldn't put everything in there that I wanted. So at first I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to fill this many pages with content? But as I started writing, I was like, oh my goodness, I could probably write this book 3 or 4 times over. So I had to be selective with what I put in there because I don't want to overwhelm people. So that's frustrating. It's like the artist who goes to the studio and they record, I don't know, 100 songs for the album and they have to whittle it down to 16 or whatever. So that's kind of how it felt. I honestly did not suffer from any type of like writer's block or anything. I write pretty much for a living. So that wasn't an issue for me at all. And I'm very fortunate. But yeah, I think just having to be selective and edit and make sure I don't overwhelm people, make the message simple enough where people could get something from it, but still just like enough knit and grit so you can walk away with some concrete ideas too.
Okay. What is the one thing that people don't realize about money?
This is going to sound really weird to say because I have based my career around studying and writing about and talking about money, but it's just money. It's just money. And I usually hear rich people say that. And I'm like, what would you know? You're rich. What would you know about that? But I think for a lot of things that I've seen and been through, at the end of the day, what gives me like peace and solace and comfort is that it's just money. It's replaceable, right? Your dollars are fungible. They can, if you lose one, you can find another. If it doesn't work out, you can make it back up. You don't have that same idea when it comes to other really important concepts like your time, your energy, your relationships. Some of those things are not replaceable or easily restored or energized, or you know what I'm right. saying? In the last couple of years, I've had some like major life changes, some very exhilarating things happen, difficult things happen. And sometimes they definitely revolved around money and the amount of stress and sleepless nights that it caused. I think you have to get to a point where you're like, you know what? It's just money. It's a tool to accomplish some things. And there are some things you can't accomplish without it. Not saying that you should put your pursuit of having a better financial status on the back burner. But if it gets overwhelming, I think it's always a good idea to reset and reorient your thoughts every once in a while. Like sometimes I'll have to do that and be like, oh, my kids spill this like $10 hot cocoa, fancy gourmet hot cocoa, which has happened before. And it's okay, am I just going to blow up and scream and all this stress or whatever? Or am I going to be like, you know what? It's money. It's not worth the trauma that I'd have to inflict on them or myself. And if that can happen with the hot chocolate, who knows? They're not driving yet, but hopefully they don't wreck any cars. But I think having that perspective, if you can preemptively have that perspective, you'll get less stressed and less upset about some of the things that happen in your life that have to do with money.
Oh. So tell me, Aja, if you had to do this all over again, what would you do differently?
Oh, that is such a big, loaded question. I think probably one of the number one things I would do is maybe educate myself a little more. I'd educate myself, and I did study some business, some economics, but just be more intentional about it, more intense and more intentional, picking some financial topic, like maybe trading or investing, and like really giving it my all and then executing on that knowledge. So obviously with investing, time is money. And I just think about, wow, how different will my life be now if I had started investing in my 20s? And in fact, when I started in corporate America, I had that very opportunity, but I didn't understand it. I'm like, 401k, why would I put money in a 401k? What is that? Why would I get stock options? I worked for a company that had great employee stock option program, and the company actually went private, then public, then private. They had this series of like wild ups and downs, but still remained a very profitable company when it came to, you know, making money for the investors. So I'm just like, oh, I was right there. I was like right under my nose and I didn't do anything because I didn't understand it. So just to sum it up, I would educate myself, start studying investing in high school, and then act on what I learned.
Sounds great. I definitely understand intent. Intent is definitely something that if you applied and just used it with 100%, you would have been able to do certain things. So I say that to myself sometimes. It's like, why did I half on this? Why did I half on that?
Exactly. Yeah, giving it your all and then executing to the best of your ability. Definitely.
Aja, I want to thank you for sharing with us today. Let us know where we can continue this conversation, where we could find you, and let us know definitely what you have going in the future.
Absolutely. So if you're interested in following me and coming along for the ride, I talk a lot about what's happening financially on a personal level too, as much as I can. So my website is principlesofincrease.com. And from there, you have the opportunity to sign up for my email list. I have a free ebook that talks about getting out of debt. So you can get that for free. You put in your email address. Now you're on my email list and I send out emails maybe like once or twice a month. And then you'll also see my socials there. So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So you can follow me on any one of those platforms as well.
Okay. Once again, thank you for coming out on Raising Financial Freedom.
Thanks for having me, Eric. This was really fun.
Aja had some strong points, and her book is definitely a good read. One thing that I could take and that really stuck with me is that just like Aja's grandmother's voice has echoed through the generations in their family about money, we as parents also need to be that voice in our family and keep that going on. As always, what I would like you to do is share with other parents or guardians, and let's keep that conversation going on. Let's see what other parents are doing when it comes to financial literacy or money, or what they are not doing. And through open conversation, we could plan a better foundation for our children. Until next week, stay safe.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. Stay connected with us directly through raisingfinancialfreedom.com. You can also join the discussion on social media, which you can also find links on our website. If you would like to speak with us, please send us an email through info@raisingfinancialfreedom.com. And as always, thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. This concludes the most thought-provoking portion of your day. Don't forget to please like and subscribe to stay fully up to date. Until next time, be kind to yourself and each other.